warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Adam Minahan here sitting with David Niles. We have Jim here with us as well, still guarding the door. It's great to be back. The last couple episodes we did in a row, you know, so there's been kind of a lag between even like, Dave, you and I just like talking. We haven't really talked in, a week or two, a week and a half.
You've been traveling.
You've been traveling. Yeah.
Had a family reunion.
Yeah. So a lot of great stuff that's been happening. Over a lot of crazy things, but a lot of great things that have been happening.
Yeah. You got to go to Washington D.C.
Yes. Well, I flew in there. I went to Front Royal, Virginia.
Oh, okay.
Which is where Christendom College is. Got to go there. Beautiful. I got to see them. Oh, I should have looked this up. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like the. It's the incense, what is it called?
A thurible.
But whenever the big ones that they swing.
Like swing from the ceiling?
Ceiling, yeah. They were installing that the day that I got there because they were using it for Vespers for the very first time.
I've seen the videos of it.
It looks epic.
Like the first time I saw one, I thought, this is a joke. This mm-hmm. is a really funny joke. Mm-hmm. Of course, this would be awesome if it existed in real life.
But it does.
And then I found out it does.
Right.
Is it an Eastern thing? Well, I mean,
I don't think so.
I feel like the video I saw at least was of an Eastern church.
I don't think so.
You know, it feels kind of Eastern, like, hey, yeah. Oh, you like beautiful, it's like, you know, like, oh, let's just go overboard with the art. What if instead of painting the walls, we just covered with icons, and then who cares what the wall looks like, because you won't see it.
Right.
You know, like that kind of
mentality,
like beautiful exuberance.
Yeah, yeah. No, but so that was really cool. And then also being very cool is I got a chance to pray Mass with Cardinal Seurat, and then I had an hour and a half private lunch with him, which was really awesome. And so,
did you tell him about me,
dude? I forgot.
I told you to tell him about me.
Yeah, I know. But then I thought, like, what do I say?
Just tell him about me.
About stuff and things.
You'd be like, you start off with Your Eminence.
Yes, that's correct. Start off well.
I need to tell you about my friend, David. And then you say the stuff.
Yeah, I did. It didn't come up naturally.
You'd be like, you would love him.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't come up naturally.
Probably be like best friends, you know.
Right.
Sort of.
But he was so amazing to talk to. He's one of those guys.
Wait, why did you have private lunch with him?
So we are with Exodus 90. We're doing some collaborations or potential collaborations.
Yeah.
And so he was in town. He had flown from Rome. He went to CUA. I think he gave a talk at CUA, and then I think he gave another talk at Napa Valley for the Napa Institute. So in between then, we had the opportunity to sit down with him and talk to him. He's a fan of Exodus 90 and the work that we do there. And so we were talking to him a little bit, and you know, it was just really more of a tell me what you envision the church to be. Tell me what you think men need to hear. Tell us what your thoughts are. You know, we just like clinged. He's like those guys that when you meet, you just are on you know, the edge of your chair waiting to hear every single word he says. You know, remember when we talked with Bishop Olmsted quite a few times, and just every time we do, we're just kind of like just waiting for him to just continue talking.
Monsignor Shea is the
same way. He was very much that way, and we were just sitting there talking to him. You know, a couple of things that he talked about that were good for reflection. One, he finds great hope for the future of the church.
You definitely should have told him about me.
Yeah. That would have actually been...
He would have loved it.
Yeah, that would have been it. I missed that opportunity. But he has great hope for the future of the church. He thinks that actually the United States and Africa like are kind of the two areas where the church is young.
Yeah.
And doing like...
There's definitely a lot of hope for the... I know it when you live here in America, it feels like things are getting worse.
Right.
And I think that's absolutely true from a cultural standpoint, but I don't think that's true from a Catholic standpoint. Really, I think that the Catholic Church is doing fairly well here in America. Not that it shouldn't be doing better, right? Like a lot of improvement.
Yeah, the numbers are growing, but...
But then when you look worldwide, man... The church in Europe is a corpse.
It's just a
corpse.
Yeah, I know. It's so sad. So he talked about that, and then he also talked about how we should be very sincere and serious with worship.
Yeah, dude.
How like
I dig that.
Do
about
we
him.
Not understand that? The holy sacrifice of the Mass is the most perfect way to worship our Lord, and that's the most important thing we can do here on earth. And if that is the most important thing out of justice to our Lord, if that is the thing that gives him the greatest glory, if that is the thing that unites us to him, you know, in the most perfect way through the altar, should we not take that incredibly serious?
Yeah. Yeah, and put all of our energies into doing it as well as we possibly can. Right.
And I just thought that was very beautiful, you know, because it came from his heart. It came out of love. He did not engage in any type of like culture war or, liturgy war. That's not what he was talking about. He was just out of love for God.
Mm-hmm.
We should do this well because this is what he commanded of us.
Yeah. 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 We don't get to decide what the Mass is, what the liturgy is. Since the beginning, God has been instructing his people on how to worship him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been something he was very meticulous about. You go and read Genesis, where he's telling Moses how to, and Exodus, it's Exodus, where he's telling Moses, How to build the ark.
Yeah,
it has to be this color with these tassels, with these many candles, you know, this big. And
it was Noah, yeah.
No, when he's telling Moses how to build the tabernacle.
Oh, you said the ark.
Well, the ark of the... Holy of Holies.
Just out of...
I'm getting those two. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
But the point is that he cares a lot about the liturgy, not because he's so worried about... Oh, you better do it the right way. But he knows that the liturgy is so instructive for us.
Yes.
And it is what orients us to him the right way. Mm-hmm. And it's because we need to be oriented towards him that way so that we can love him.
Yeah. So that was phenomenal. It was so great to meet him. It was, you know, kind of a once in a lifetime thing. You know, he turned 79 the day after we met him.
Mm.
And one of the things that I did do, I didn't even tell you this, Jim. He is a fan of the yummy scale. Yes, he knew about it, and he said logically it's inconsistent. He said logically it's inconsistent. What I did was I wrote down a list of my family members and friends, and gave it to him, and. At the end, I forgot to like, oh, and those who listen to the Catholic Man Show, I said TCMS because I didn't want to be like, I'm promoting my own thing. Or like, I just like, I knew he would just say it.
Whatever
it
says.
Yeah. Yeah. And so on the day of his birthday, he offered Mass with those intentions with my family and friends and those who listen to the show for Mass, and kept the note underneath the chalice on the altar during Mass.
Brilliant.
So
it's beautiful.
That was really super cool.
So anyone who's listening to this right now, you just got yeah. prayed for
yeah.
personally by Cardinal Robert Sarah.
You're welcome.
Is it Sarah?
That's how we, yes, I think so.
Okay. Because I said that's, Sarah for
that's how,
years and
that's
years.
That's how his assistant. Like,
okay. It's hard to like.
Oh, one other thing that's super cool is his assistant, Father Tony, or Monsignor Tony, is the head person for Blessed Carlo Acutis.
No
like,
kidding.
He's like, he's in charge of the body. He's in charge of the church at Assisi. He's like in charge of the whole thing. So like, it was really cool because he was there, which I would have loved to just like sit and talk with him. I mean, he was fascinating, fascinating man, a very holy man. And then you have Cardinal Sarah on the other side. So it's just like two guys and they were just kind of ping pong and talking back and forth. And you're just like, I can't believe I'm even here. This is incredible.
This is great. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you for your words.
Oh, thanks for just letting me be here.
Yeah. That's how I felt.
My daughter, Mary, she took Acutis, Carlo Acutis, as her confirmation saint this year.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
My goddaughter.
Yeah. So that was cool.
What are we drinking tonight?
Oh, gosh. We are drinking it's a 10-year-old scotch from Altmore.
Okay.
When we get back, I'm going to tell you just a little bit more about it. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. By the way, those who have become a patron of the Catholic Man Show recently, we know we gave that candle bonus from Ambrosian Candles.
Yeah.
Those are being shipped out like this week. So if you joined the Patreon recently, you'll be getting those here pretty soon. So be checking
Men,
that out.
Have you checked
we'll
out Exodus 90 lately? If you've heard of Exodus 90 before, you're probably thinking cold showers and Lent. But the Exodus 90 app offers so much more. It's a daily companion to help you grow to closer to God and to become the man you want to be. This summer, I'm following along with the app's daily scriptures, reflections, and prayers. It's awesome. On the app, you can join the Enthronement to the Sacred Heart, the Exodus 90 Summer Book Club, and St. Michael's Lent, which starts August 15th and leads up to the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th. St. Michael's Lent is an ancient tradition of prayer and fasting popularized by St. Francis in the Middle Ages that's been lost in our time. Let's bring it back. Join the men of Exodus 90 and four Carlos Martins, Catholic priest, exorcist, and host of the Exorcist Files, who will serve as our spiritual guide for St. Michael's Lent this year on the Exodus 90 app. We will awaken to invisible realities and enter into the spiritual battle that rages around us all the time. Go to exodus90.com for a 14-day free trial to the Exodus 90 app and to learn more about St. Michael's Lent. That's exodus90.com to join us for St. Michael's Lent starting August 15th.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles. Here with Adam Minahan, Jimbo Baggins. We were just talking about the whiskey we're drinking. It's a product of the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society. So they bought some of these barrels from Altmore. And then they finished them in first fill X bourbon barrels.
Mm.
And I don't know why, but when you get a whiskey that's finished by the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, it just tends to be amazing. Altmore is very popular. It's a Speyside, a little bit on the higher end price wise. You know, as far as like Speysides go, I tend not to be as big of a fan of Altmore.
Mm.
I have bought several bottles from them expecting like, oh, wow. And it'll have these great reviews or stuff. And maybe it's just me, but
could be.
Yeah, it, very well. It probably is just me. I've just never. I've always been a little bit. I'm just being honest, a little bit disappointed in Altmore. This, however, today is not disappointing at all.
Yeah, Jim, where is it on the yummy scale?
Hard to place.
Four point nine eight.
Did you say 4.98? The compression in the yummy scale.
It's
Jim. You know how like sometimes when a stock gets so expensive, they have to do a stock split just to get the price down to where like people can like buy it again. I feel like we need a stock split. Like, because
the yummy scale.
We're like in the 4.98, 4.9886. It's like let's do a 10 for 1. Okay, we'll drop off the bottom four numbers. Then we can just go back to only operating between 4 and 5, mm-hmm. 4 and 5, or something. Except we'll spread it way out. Yep. It's like zooming in. We're gonna zoom in on the yummy scale.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So we also just got back from Branson for a family vacation.
Yeah.
Branson is
great place.
Great place. Just as yeah. Great place.
Like
we went to Silver Dollar City.
I love going to Branson. I know, like I always thought it was for old people, and it isn't. It's for families.
Yeah, it's for families. We went to Silver Dollar City. We went on some roller coasters.
It's not cheap.
It's not cheap.
There's like very little to do there that's cheap.
Right.
But it's all very cool.
Yes, and so we went to Silver Dollar City. We rode some roller coasters. Some of the first time for some of my kids to ride a roller coaster. So it was like me and my family, my sister and her family, my other sister and her family, and my parents. And
yeah.
So we all went. So we're, I mean, everywhere we go, we are just a sight to behold because you know, there's 13 kids, 10, 11 and under, you know, and so we're all over the
yeah.
place.
Yeah.
Know? So we go and we go into, I guess, I forget what the roller coaster is called, but it's the biggest, the fastest, biggest roller coaster in Silver Dollar City.
Is it Wildfire?
It may be.
Is it Wooden?
Yes.
Oh, that's Outlaw Run.
Outlaw Run. Yes, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
I was just there. Right. I was like there a month and a half ago, and there was nobody there.
Yeah, because
and so we were just like looping, like just get back in line and just get on the ride again. So yeah. We got to do all these rides a bunch of times.
Okay, so you know, so Anna it says I want to go. We're like, okay, let's go. Jude, I want to go. Okay, let's go. So, you know, Anna's 7. Jude uh-huh. is 9.
Was she tall enough?
She was tall enough.
Okay.
So, Anna rode with me. Jude was right in front of me with Kaylin, my sister.
Yeah.
You know, we're going up, click, 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 yes. click, click, click. And all of a sudden, I'm seeing Anna's eyes, and her eyes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger because she was realizing, like, we're going to have to come down at some point. You know,
yeah,
like,
wait.
We're going really, wait. Really high up.
Wait, so, why are we going up so high?
Yeah, so this roller coaster, like, it goes really up, and then it just drops.
It doesn't just drop.
It
slings you. It actually, like, slings you down.
Yeah.
Oh,
it just completely goes down, and then, like, you're whipping around, and then it does this double corkscrew, and at the
right.
end, and...
Okay, so we also were there with the kids. One of my nieces was there who was, like, kind of afraid of roller coasters. We were really trying to coax her. We
yeah.
get to this one.
And you got her on.
And I was like, look, this is a wooden, old-fashioned roller coaster.
No.
It's not going to be nearly as fast as the last one we were at. And she's like, okay. And we're like about to get on, and then she bails.
Mm.
And so her and her dad leave. And so me and Elizabeth and then one of my other nieces, we get on. And when we like came crashing back in, it was like, oh my God, like what just happened
yeah,
to me?
Yeah.
I didn't know wooden roller coasters could do corkscrews.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the physics worked
yeah. did,
on
did,
that.
Did Elizabeth like it?
No.
No. Anna
she,
didn't either.
She was like really happy she did it.
Yes. Very proud, but
yeah.
like did not want to
but
do it.
But then afterwards, Mary, my second oldest, she went on it 2 more times with me.
Oh, wow.
She was like, let's do it again.
So Jude passes out.
What?
During it. Yes. He passes out during it.
Was it of like just it couldn't
just,
handle it
like,
too
I,
much?
I don't know. I, like, because I just saw the back of his head. And I just saw his head and he was bobblehead Joe. Like just very clearly like he's not in control. Like, you know, because, I mean, it was just unconscious. And then the picture comes up, and he is just, like, stone cold, like, eyes closed, like, no emotion, head down, like, very clearly, this kid doesn't know. Like, this kid's out.
So it was, like, too much of a rush.
And then, but he was like, it was awesome. Like, that was so great. I was so scared. I closed my eyes the whole time. And I'm like, no, Jude. You were passed out the whole time.
It seemed like it was really fast, though.
Yeah.
Like, right after that big, real scary part at the beginning, it was just kind of over.
Yeah. Which is really crazy. But, yeah, so he passed out during it.
That is hilarious.
Yeah.
No, that roller coaster is insane.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, first of all, they, like, there's no shoulder, you know, you're just, like, yeah, at the legs. Then they cinch, you are cinched down in there good.
Thank goodness.
You better get positioned the way you want to be positioned before you get into this roller coaster. We don't have to keep talking about it. It's not the roller coaster show, but that roller coaster
is
fun. Is
there a podcast? I bet there is a podcast.
Oh, there's definitely podcasts about roller coasters.
Yeah.
And, like, where that's all they talk
about.
That
sounds very boring to me.
But if you're going to a park and
they could help.
Because, you know, like, you're going to Disneyland or even, like, Silver Dollar City in the middle of the rush.
Six Flags.
Yeah, like, you have to decide what three rides do we want, because it's going to be
today.
2 hours.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
To ride Mr. Freeze or whatever, right. You know.
No, I get it.
Anyway.
So, yeah, that's what we did. So, you went on family vacation.
We had a family reunion. Go? Yeah, we were at Table Rock Lake.
We were really close to each other.
We were, yeah. Just about an hour away from where you were. Great time. It's my mom's side. Everybody comes. She's one of nine, so it's really big family.
Yeah.
A lot of sitting around in the pool, in the lake, drinking beer.
It's terrible.
Yeah. It's oppressive.
Yeah.
But we do it...
For the kids.
It's for the kids. But, like, we have themed dinners every night.
Yeah.
Where you...
This is insane.
You need a costume.
Haley and I actually talked about your family reunion on the way down. And we decided, like, if my family decided to do that, we'd be like, we're in for one night.
Okay. It's too much.
Yeah.
Okay. Back when it was just me...
Yeah. Because, like, tell them, like, you have to have a costume for every night.
Every night there's a costume. Now, it's like, I didn't have a costume for every night.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
Lady Pamela, she's getting six costumes for every night.
Right.
For the kids.
Right.
Right? And, like, it's a little overwhelming for her.
Right.
You know? Because the kids want to have costumes.
Of course.
You know?
That's why we decided, like, we'd just be in for one night. We'll be there. We'll be in the audience. Like, we'll cheer them on. But, yeah. Like,
so this year, it just...
ends up being so much work.
We had a 1920s, a 1980s, a 1770s. Ooh. So we had, like, the 20s. Then there was also the I remember it was 30s or 40s, like Great Depression. Mm-hmm. So 30s. The 20s, 30s, 80s, and then the 70s, except it was not the 1970s, the 1770s. And so my brother Jake, he showed up, he had a white t-shirt that said, like, 1920s shirt. And then the next day it was crossed out and it said 1930s shirt. And then the next day it was crossed out and then it said 1980s shirt.
Nice.
It's like, Jake, brilliant.
Yeah. Gotta hand it to you, bro.
Only I had thought, like, I'd have done it with you, bro. Yeah. share these great ideas.
Oh, man. So what are we going to talk about tonight?
We're going to talk about chastity.
Okay.
I was just recently reading through this book by Bishop Eric Varden called Chastity.
The Reconciliation of Senses.
Reconciliation of the Senses.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. And I know I was reading it. Well, you actually got it for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I had no idea that Exodus is currently doing a book study on this.
Yeah, so I highly recommend going and getting it. It's by Bishop Eric Varden. It's called Chastity, Reconciliation of the Senses. We're doing Dr. Jared Stout, who's our director of content. He's leading the book study on Zoom, and each week we just go through.
Do you need to have the app?
Nope. You don't even have to have the app.
Anybody
can join.
Anybody can join.
And
Dr. Stout, he's incredible.
He's incredible. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So if you just go to either Exodus 90's Facebook page or their website, you'll be able to find it. So
yeah. So I've been reading it, getting ready for tonight's episode, only to later find out.
That we've
been
doing it. Even if you've, you know, we'll be doing it for another you know, 3 or 4 weeks. So if you're just
because you just did
in,
the first chapter,
first two chapters, we've done
first two chapters.
We've
okay,
done the first two chapters. Yeah.
Can you are those
and,
available?
They're recorded. And they're available. They're available both on the app and yeah, on the recordings are available on the app, so you can go check it out there. Go to download.exodus90.com. But I really love this book. The first chapter. This is the feedback that we got so far. The first chapter's a little tough to get through because he's explaining some different things. He's bringing in terminology. He's bringing in, he's broaching the topic. You know, so he has to kind of define some things. So it's somewhat,
but it's not too bad. I don't think it's too bad.
I don't think it's too bad. But you know, there's some words you may not be familiar with. The second chapter gets better. The third chapter gets even better. I mean, it just keeps continually getting
easier
better.
And easier, yeah. And better and better.
So
we'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. We're in Dave's house, not our studio yet. We're hoping to build a studio here in his house.
In the next room, through that door, right, yeah, there, which leads into what is currently an attic.
Yes, that's the plan. We could use your support, though, to be able to make this happen, because it costs money. So if you want to see us on YouTube or continue to do the show with video, we'd love your support. Go to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow.
We could also use your prayers for my father-in-law, Mr. Dan O'Brien, who's going to be doing it. He's going to be doing most of the work.
Yes.
We don't like to waste money needlessly here on the Catholic Man Show. Mm-mm. Which is, you know, like, for one thing, we don't pay ourselves from all of our Patreon support. I know a lot of other shows do, and I think it's just for them to do so. So I don't begrudge other podcast people for doing it, but we don't. Mm-hmm. All of our money goes back towards marketing and promoting the show and buying what we need. So anyway, we would love your support.
That would be really
awesome. Adam, tell them how they can support us.
Patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow, and you'll receive $10. If you do $10 more a month, you'll get a Catholic Man Show Glencairn glass, the whiskey glass. $25 more, you'll get a beer stein, or beer can glasses, I'm sorry.
Which are really great. Glasses. I do love those things.
And then there's also a couple of spots for $50 or more, $100 or more a month. I think we have $1,000.
And I have previously said that if you support us at the $10,000 level a month, that I will yell your name every day from the top of my lungs at some point and call you every month just to see how you're doing, just to check in. Okay? So if anybody wants to do that.
There you go. If that really tips the scales,
like,
for you.
You and I can be best friends.
And you get whatever in the prize closet.
Yeah. So. At Jim's house. Probably everything in the prize
you're
closet.
You're like, actually, I don't want any of that. We're now deterring people from... So we're talking about chastity. What I love about Bishop Vardon's book, Bishop Vardon himself is a very interesting man. He's a Norwegian bishop. He's a Trappist monk. He's not a typical bishop from that standpoint.
So he likes beer.
He's not. I'm sure he does, but you know, he's not a secular priest. You know, uh-huh. He's a Trappist monk. So
I think we need. I think we need more bishops, cardinals coming out of religious life. It used to happen all the time.
Yeah, but most of them get into the religious life to avoid that.
Right. There also used to be a lot more religious priests. Yeah.
But what I love about his book is how he sets it up that before we can actually talk about chastity itself, like, we need to understand who man is, mm-hmm. what he is made for, and like what the end goal, namely contemplation, like what man is made for, before we could actually like understand truly what chastity is, right? So he spends...
It's very much like John Paul II.
Very much.
He wrote Love and Responsibility. Yeah. Like, I think that came out right around the time of Vatican II, before he was Pope. And then what he said what was missing was an adequate anthropology. Mm-hmm. Basically, he hadn't laid out exactly what you're talking about. Who is man? Because you can't talk about what the end...
for.
What is the end of man? What is the purpose?
Good for them.
Right. If you don't know what it is. What's the nature of the human being? So he did that through his Wednesday audiences, John Paul II did.
Right, yeah.
But what he didn't do that I really like, what Vardin does is specifically linking that idea of who man is with chastity and into contemplation. Mm-hmm. Because ultimately contemplation is the end of man.
Right.
So I think it is the logical conclusion. And so I really love how he brings that all together in this book.
Yeah, and you know the subtitle, The Reconciliation of the Senses, right? So like how when your senses is being utilized for what they're truly meant to do, how vibrant and alive and truly united in Christ, because you're made in the image and likeness of God, right? And so like the more that you become more like Christ, the more you become like God, mm-hmm. the more like you actually live who you were supposed to be as man, right? Which is like how Adam lived before the fall, right? You know, this is like what our goal is to live like that, right? Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting how he talks about how even Adam is clothed in robes of glory before the fall, right? And how, you know, think about this. He's in the garden and he's conversing with his creator, conversing with God.
Mm-hmm.
And how once he falls, he is stripped of this clothing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what does he do? But he sees that he is naked, and he goes and he looks down. He no longer is looking up, conversing with God. He's no longer ascending, looking up, being clothed in this glory. He is now looking down at material.
He stoops towards the earth at this point. Yeah.
You know, even Plato picks up on, like, this is something that even Plato talks about, right? That we're made to ascend, and how we're not made to be cows who are constantly down, you know, just feeding our senses and our appetites, but that we are called to look up, that we're not just our appetites. That's not who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And so Adam goes and looks down at material to clothe himself, right? And this is like kind of the bummer moment, right? Like, you're like, are you kidding me? Like, you had this opportunity and you failed, but then you take a step back and you're like, well, wait a minute. I had the same opportunity Adam did, right? I was baptized. I was clothed in his glory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was entered into his family, into God's family. And how long did I hold on to that?
Yeah.
You know, like, so we all have fallen, right? We all, you know, we've all done this. So it's very easy, I think, to
we
blame.
We have concupiscence now to deal with, you know.
Correct.
Which,
yeah, which is,
Adam
which is
didn't
a distinction.
Before the fall. Yeah.
But
it's an important distinction.
Yeah, it is important. Yeah, but it's easy to kind of blame him, right?
Sure.
But what I love about it is he talks about how the mercy and the redemption of Adam, which I don't think is talked about very much.
Yeah, you know, it's a tradition of the church that Adam was the first one into heaven. So when Christ descended into hell into the limbo of the fathers, the place of the dead, Sheol, and took those souls waiting, that Adam was the first one mm-hmm. to receive the glory of the beatific vision, mm-hmm. right? Just as he's the father of humanity, mm-hmm. the first one to receive the mercy, setting the tone for the rest of humanity. Mm-hmm. Adam, since we're talking about chastity, would you like to posit a definition of what is chastity?
I don't have a definition that I was prepared to just like launch.
I don't have one written down. I would say chastity is something like the virtue by which we use our bodies in a holy way in communion with others. You know, when we use our bodies interacting with another person, you know, are we being habitually disposed to use our body in a holy way with other people? One of the things I wanted to get into today, I've got some things here from the Catechism. We're not going to go through all of them. But 2338 says that the chaste person maintains the integrity of the powers of life and love placed in him. This integrity ensures the unity of the person. It is opposed to any behavior that would impair it. It tolerates neither a double life nor duplicity in speech. And I wanted to dig into that idea of using our speech well, because I think that a lot of guys who are, you know, striving to live a holy life, and you know, I've got plenty of accusation to throw at myself in this with regard to this, but you know, maybe you're on the golf course or in the locker room or at poker night, whatever it is, where you feel like, oh, you know, it's okay to tell some of these jokes, or you know, because it's just a men's environment, maybe we can talk in a certain way. And I think that is true. I do think when you're in a men's environment that there is some camaraderie and fellowship that takes place when, like, hey, we're men here. There's no children. There's no women. You know, we're gonna talk in a different way. Okay, I think that to a certain degree that actually that can be an uplifting thing, right? Like, we wouldn't say these, you know, talk exactly in the same way in front of women and children, okay? So, but I do think that we need to still be vigilant, because it can quickly go too far.
Sure.
And I hadn't really considered, this is just in the Catechism, I hadn't really considered that even though we're just using words, that even our words alone could be a violation of chastity. You know, it kind of reminds me of Christ saying, and I'm sure he was blowing the minds of the Jews who said, when he said, even if you look at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart.
Right.
You know, I'm sure they were like, what?
Right.
Can you run that by me? What, you know, it's like,
right. Yeah, what I think is very interesting, even in the catechism, you know, the catechism talks about the integrity and how, and Bishop Varden really brings this out of how integrity and chastity are so intertwined that they're integral with for one another, right?
Uh-huh.
And he talks about how, which I really like, this is the very end of chapter one, that he talks about the essence of becoming chaste is not putting to death our nature, but its orientation enacted through integral reconciliation towards fullness in life. You know, so like, it's not like we're putting to death who we are.
Right.
But it's actually, chastity is bringing us more towards that which we are created to be.
Beautiful.
Which I think is, I mean, yeah, I think that like, it's not a no, it's a yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the quicker that we can understand that it's not a negative, but a positive, it's a beautiful Christian paradox, but it's a positive, that it brings to life more what the virtue truly is.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about chastity, especially a book put out by Bishop Eric Varden called Chastity, Reconciliation of the Senses. Highly recommend it.
Yeah. So can I pick up something before I forget?
Yeah, I was gonna build on what you say. Are you going in a new direction? Or
no,
you
I'm saying, going in the same direction,
okay,
here. So, so before the break, we were talking about like how it brings out life, right? It's life giving. It brings us more.
You don't have to put yourself to death.
Yeah, you don't have to put yourself to death. It actually is something that is part of your nature.
Part of yourself to death.
Your
desires,
appetites.
Yeah, some of your appetite, but not who you are.
Right.
To death. Right.
And it's because that the sexual relations is such a good thing,
mm-hmm,
right? In that it actually, the marital...
We are hardwired to want it.
Right. And it's solidifying a sacrament, right?
Yeah.
And not only is it solidifying it as in holy matrimony, but also is renewing it, a Aquinas talks about this, right? That each time that you renew your marital vows, if you are both in the state of grace, it is a grace-giving thing that you do, right? And so if it is something that is part of a sacrament, that is life-giving, that is a grace moment, then you have to be in a state in which you can receive this grace, right? And so this is why it's such a beautiful thing, is mm-hmm. like, it's not like you can't receive communion if you haven't been baptized yet.
Yeah.
Because you're not prepared to receive communion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, not because communion is a bad thing. It's because it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a gift from the church. It's a sacrament. It's an avenue of grace that is given to you through the church. Well, it's the same thing with holy matrimony and the conjugal relations, right? Is that it's a gift given by God, and you have to be prepared in a state of your life that you can receive this grace.
Right. Yeah, it's a positive.
Right.
Okay. What there's a quote here from the Pontifical Council from the Family that I really like, that chastity is the joyous affirmation of someone who knows how to live self-giving.
Right.
I just love the idea of it being a joyous affirmation. Mm-hmm. That like I'm not like having to hold myself back. Like chastity ultimately is always a yes. It's a yes to the dignity of the other person.
Which means, right, that it's not just for priests who are celibate.
Right, because that's called abstinence.
Yeah, celibacy.
Or celibacy. I mean, same. Abstinence can be from more than sexual relations, right. You know, but chastity is for everybody. Even if you're married, you still have to be chaste. It just means that you have to use your body. Once again, I'm sure there's a better definition out there, but I just say use your body in a holy way. And if you're married, well, marital relations with your spouse is a holy thing to do. Mm-hmm. And the church is like all about it.
Right.
That intimate relationship is so, so important and so holy. That's why the church goes through such pains to guard it, and safeguarding it for only inside of marriage. I want to bring up another quote here from the Catechism,
okay.
Which I think plays really, really well here. This is 2350. Those who are engaged to marry are called to live chastity in continence, meaning in abstinence, you know, so that kind of abstinent chastity for that time period. They should see in this time of testing a discovery of mutual respect and apprenticeship of fidelity to the hope of receiving one another from God. They should reserve for marriage the expression of the affection belonging to the married love, which will help them grow in chastity. I just love that. This time of testing as a discovery of mutual respect and apprenticeship in fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
So much of the Catechism is just poetically gorgeous. You know,
it's almost like Ratzinger.
It's almost like John Paul II and Ratzinger and some other really great guys wrote it.
Yeah.
But that is, I just found so much truth in that. And I can remember being engaged and having some kind of older couples come up to Lady Pamela and I and say, oh, being engaged is such a great time. It was so much fun. You know, and at the time, feeling a little bit frustrated, if I may, in more than one way, like, hey, we're trying to like, it's chaotic. You're trying to plan this wedding and everyone's going to be there. And also like, all you want to do is be married.
Right.
Right. Because you found this person, she's gorgeous. You're spending all this time with her.
Right.
You're just like,
I'm just going to love you so good.
Tripping over each other in love, right. You know, all the time. And like, oh my gosh, are we married yet? You know?
Yeah.
So I didn't, but looking back on it, gosh, I now feel that same way that like, man, being engaged was so exciting. You have your whole life in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
All of the things you've always dreamed about, like, oh, someday when I find my spouse or, you know, like it's all happening. It's like, here it is. It, like, it's for real now. And there was just so much excitement about that. And, like with just Pamela and I, that was really the first relationship where chastity ever really worked out for me. Mm-hmm. And so it was such a, it was just such an edifying experience. The trust that we had, because we were able to be chaste with ourselves, like the fear that one of us wasn't going to be faithful was just, it was silly, mm. You know, because we had that faithfulness between us. Like it was just obvious that this is something that was going to exist. Mm. Like she knows she can trust me to be faithful with other people, you know, to be chaste there because I can be chaste with her.
Right.
It was just such a important foundational. So for all the engaged couples out there, mm-hmm. Look, I understand it can be a trying moment, but you have to persevere. It's right. So worth it.
Yeah. So before one thing I want to talk about before we get off on radio, at least talking about, you know, what if and when you fall, you know, like and not live up to chastity, like what to do, like how to, like, you know, what to, because there are a lot of people out there who desire to live a chaste life.
Yeah.
Who like want to do it. Like they, you know, they want to be virtuous.
Desperately.
Desperately. And either they've habitually falling into it, you know, or falling out of, you know, the virtue of chastity, so to speak, or, mm-hmm. or you're just, you slip up one time and you're like, man, I can't believe I did that. You know, like, so like what to do, like what should you do when that happens? Obviously go to confession. Confession is the best remedy, right?
Immediately,
as soon as possible. But how I have found it to be very beneficial, in all, like living the virtuous life in general, right, of striving to live the virtuous life, is the examination of conscience at the end of the day really plays a huge role in this, because it gives you the script in which you were led down to this road.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, what happened today that caused me to get to this point? Because
right.
getting to that point in that moment of saying and then saying, yes, I want to be virtuous, is so much harder than the 15 steps before you actually get to that point.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And saying like, no, it's easier to just say yes now, because the further you go, the harder it is to say yes.
Yeah.
Because your passions are going, you're just like...
The train started, you know, a day ago,
right.
hours ago, but it's like 15
steps
decisions ago.
Right.
Where you had to engage your will in a direction.
Right.
And, you know, you have to realize, like exactly what you're saying, through frequent examinations of conscience, that at that time you're not actually doing anything wrong yet,
right?
But you have to be aware. You need to know yourself to where you see like, no, but I know where this road leads, because mm-hmm. I've been down it, and it only I know I could go down this road, and it is possible to turn around,
mm-hmm.
but there's only one place that this road leads to,
right?
And it is to the place where, you know, I end up in shame, humiliation, and ultimately having to seek, you know, like the sacrament of confession again.
Right. And so, you know, it again, it's very hard to say yes or say no to something when you're in the throes of passions or throes of, you know, of sin that's being that you're about to commit. But if you have this daily examination of conscience, you realize, oh, well, the reason why I went down this road was, well, the things that were consistent were like every time I'm tired, it seems like, oh, I grab my phone really fast to kind of scroll through something, and one picture leads to another picture, and then all of a sudden, yeah. like something happens. Or, oh, I was hungry and I got a little angry, and then all of a sudden, like that anger actually led me to do something else, which led me to drink, which led me to do this, which led me to like, and
outburst,
then like you realized,
yeah. Yeah.
Wow, I would have never done this outburst, but I can't believe I did it. But I actually, it was because I was actually drinking too much, and it was actually because I was angry at this person who cut me off in traffic. And you realize that the train actually started back whenever you're driving home and somebody cuts you off in traffic.
Yeah.
And that's what led you actually down to the road where actually you're committing mortal sin. And so mm-hmm. the importance of understanding and knowing thyself and knowing that, like, hey, when I'm weak in this position, this is what my tendencies are. This is where my concupiscence kicks in. And it's very important for me to put guards up and guardrails up during that time. And if that means, listen, I don't get to watch Netflix today, or if that means I'm not checking my phone today.
Right. But in that moment, it's like the idea of like, oh, I'm going to discipline myself super hard to do, because if you wanted to watch Netflix before or whatever it is, fill in the blank, mm-hmm. you want to do it even more now that you're angry or hungry or tired, you know, like,
yeah. Or lonely or whatever it is.
Your energy level for discipline goes way down, which is why accountability is so crucial to all of these things. Because everything you've said is completely right, but you need to have somebody where you can say, like, hey, I'm just like, I got cut off in traffic and I'm really angry. I need you to pray, you know, like,
yeah.
just say a prayer for me before these things happen.
Yeah. So we're out of time on Catholic Radio. Go check us out on the podcast, because on the podcast, we're going to give a little tip that Dave and I do with a couple other guys on how to hold each other accountable.
I also want to get into contemplation with chastity.
Okay. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
And cheers to Jesus.
Okay. So something that here's a good tip that Dave and I have been doing with at least one other guy. And we've been doing it probably for, I don't know, 14 years, 15 years.
No way.
I mean, I've been married for 12.
Were we doing it before you got married?
Yeah.
You serious?
Yeah. Yeah. It was when we were
I'm not old enough to have been doing something for that long, bro.
It was when we,
I'm not as old as you are.
Yeah. You're like 3 months younger,
but
less than 3 months,
but you got a whole lot extra number on you.
So here's what we do. We're in a group chat. And if a buddy falls in some sort of sin where it's a grave sin of some nature, he texts us and he says, hey, you know, this is what happened. I've fallen. Okay. Then the other guys who received the text within 24 hours, does not like
skip
offers
a meal.
Offers up a meal. Yeah, skips a meal, for that person. And here's the thing that I think the beautiful part about this is one, if you're the guy who commits the sin, it is very humbling to have to admit to your friends.
Yeah.
Right. It's something that's very difficult to do, because you don't want to share, you know, some of those things with other people. So one, it gets you prepared. Like, it's a humbling moment for you.
Yeah.
But two, I have found that it's given, like, me as a person, you know, me, whenever I offer up a meal, I feel like that I'm able to love him more.
Totally.
Because the sacrifice that I'm, you know, that I'm doing.
I mean, that's objectively true.
Right. But, like, it comes through, it manifests, right? Like,
you have more, like, feelings of charity towards him.
Yeah, because like I desire for his good.
Yeah.
And okay. only for his good, only for his well being. Like I'm only doing, like, because a lot of times I don't want to do it. Like a lot of times, like, it's very inconvenient for me. But I love this person so much.
Yeah.
And I desire his good that I want to, I want him to be in heaven. And I want to be in heaven.
Yeah.
Right. And so like, I want to deny myself, something that's very minor, a meal, not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
But for the love of him, that he may have a good reconciliation with God.
This would have been a lot harder when we were 18. Oh yeah. But still, there are times where it happens. It's like, what? Not now. Like, yeah. Right, yeah, exactly.
Well, it's in within 24 hours, so you can pick.
Yeah, but they're just, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and it's just a good tangible way to actually make a difference.
It has helped me to realize the definition of love that Aquinas gives, you know, the willing of the good of the other. Like, marriage obviously is one of those things that you know, helps you really understand that I desire the good for you, regardless of the cost of me.
Especially children, right?
Right. But in a very friendship, like a very friendship type of love, this is something that really has brought a home for me of what that means, what that truly means. Filial love.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to think of this whole time, and it was like really bugging me that I could not come. Like,
I'm glad you got there, bro.
Yeah, it took me a little while. Anyway. Like, that's a good tip, I think,
It is. Yeah, it is. It is. And also, we didn't mention it, but obviously, the connection between fasting and, sexual sin is very strong.
Yes.
I mean, all of the... It's just well known. It's fasting is one of the best cures for sins of a sexual nature. If your sexual appetite is out of control, one of the best ways to start getting that in shape is to learn to fast. In almost always, sexual appetites that are out of control go side by side with actually like food appetites that are not well managed either.
Yeah, and it's because like your will is weak,
right?
And that's not like I'm not pointing fingers like my will is weak, like you know, like but the thing is like you have to your will is like a muscle, and you have to engage it, and you have to like strengthen it over time and say yes to certain things and no to certain things
right.
over and over again, to where when you get put in that position before you're 15 marks down the road and you realize like, I can't believe I did this. I can't, like, how did I get myself into this position? Well, it's because your will at the very beginning, when you weren't actually doing anything wrong, when you weren't like, when you were just kind of like flirting with things, you actually said yes to flirting with this thing instead of saying, nope, I know what this road leads down. This is not towards sanctity. This is not towards holiness. I want my will to be oriented towards virtue. And like, that's very hard to do, but the only way to do it is by saying no to yourself and little things throughout the day or little opportunities with food.
Let me ask you a question, Adam.
The answer is Jesus.
I think almost always you're right, but this is not that kind of question.
Oh, okay.
Do you think the world today is more dangerous than it was when Jimbo was young?
In what way?
Okay, so when boomers were kids.
Are you a boomer? You're a boomer?
He's a boomer.
Okay.
Look at his white beard.
I know, but I just wanted to like technically say like, okay, yes.
I love your white beard, by the way, Jimbo.
Yeah, I do too. I see the picture that you have on LinkedIn without the beard.
Oh my gosh.
It throws me off every time.
Like, what is that? What is that picture?
Who is this?
What is that picture from like 1992 or something? When I see that picture, it's like, come on, Jim. Nobody thinks this is you. It's like me putting a baby picture up. So, you know, when boomers were young, mm-hmm. you know, they walked to school, they would ride their bike into town mm-hmm. By themselves. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't considered dangerous. Mm-hmm. You know, it was safe. It was the normal thing to do. Today, that sounds ridiculous. You know, like, oh yeah, I'm going to let my 9-year-old son and the neighbor kid ride their bike 5 miles into town to the gas station to buy some candy, and then they're going to come back. Mm-hmm. No big deal. I mean, so I've wondered about that. You know, like having kids, and you know, it's like, is the world actually more dangerous? Is it actually more dangerous now to let your kids do that than it was back then? Or have we just become convinced that it's more dangerous because of social media, like the news reporting absolutely every bad thing that ever happens or is in fact the world a more dangerous place?
Well, I think that the world is a more dangerous place insofar as that the war against the family is just so under attack.
Yeah.
And has been broken. And
definitely.
And because the family, the more and more that the family has become broken and attacked, that's the first unit of civilization, right? It's the first society. And so because the family has been under attack more now than what it was, you know, in the 50s, 60s, that leads to much more danger because there's not stability.
Yeah.
The father,
I agree.
The father and the mother are not in one with one another. The reason why you could allow your kid to walk, you know, to school 3 miles or go ride a bike to go get candy and come back is because you knew that all these families were all, you know, all the moms and dads were together and that like they were all living in accordance to Christian values that we...
Right.
That,
yeah. There was a lot more uniformity of principles
right.
back then. And if your kids were acting a fool or if somebody else was doing something that people We're going to intervene.
Yeah.
So I have come to the conclusion that, in fact, the world is a more dangerous place than it used to be for two reasons.
Okay.
One is what you just said. The culture is no longer the backstop it used to be, mm-hmm. Where there was a presumption of moral, like a certain moral level mm-hmm. that was going to be present no matter where you go. Also, I think that it just seems like you hear about, sexual deviance more often now. And it's like, is that because they're more reported? I actually think there are more of them. And I think that because of the incredible rise in popularity and access to pornography, just from like the 90s, just in the last 30 years, 20 years, that those we are now feeding appetites all the time that were never fed before. So men today, like in order to get back in the day, go 20 years ago, to get pornography, you had to go to a store, you had to like kind of have some embarrassing, like face-to-face purchase with some dude, you know, like whatever, you know, it was harder to get, right?
There's more shame involved.
There were so many more barriers. Mm-hmm. And now it's readily available on the internet, and there's the variety, mm-hmm. However deranged you want to be. Here it is.
Sure.
And so I think that because of that, we are now feeding appetites that for the first time in human history, these appetites had never been fed like this before.
Sure.
And so that is just, it's causing people to become worse.
Animalistic.
Animals, right? Yeah, that all of a sudden, and obviously pornography degrades the way we view others.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, it's proven.
Yeah, was
it Ted Bundy who actually said, like, look, pornography led me to do these things?
Yeah, he did at one of his last interviews before he.
I think
he died.
I think that there's a lot of validity.
Yeah. So here's the counter argument. I think that.
Good. Okay. Yeah.
I think that there's the counter argument is that because the internet has provided readily available all this knowledge that was never given, like in the boomer generation, that it actually could be fed a lot of the appetites for the good, right?
So, oh, sure. Like, I'm not making a critique on the internet.
I understand, but like, yeah. Like, is it more evil or like the thing is, the internet is a tool; it could be used for good or it could be used for bad. I think though that because of the readily availableness of the internet, which Elon Musk is just like killing it with the Starlink thing, right? Like. It's just ridiculous. Like basically everywhere is going to basically have internet, like yeah. high speed internet here pretty soon. I don't know the ramifications of that. That's
Cox,
very
Cox.
Like, you know, finally, like, there's somebody else. Like
Cox has got to be
Comcast
just
in your
shivering,
face,
shaking in their boots. Yeah.
But like, I think the level of being able to say, "I didn't know this was true."
That's a whole other can of worms right there, you know.
Because I think that like everybody has access.
You can find
now,
something on the internet that says whatever.
But everybody
you want.
Has access now to St. Thomas Aquinas' Summa for free. Everybody has access to St. Ambrose, St. Augustine. They have access to.
Assuming they even know those things exist, that's the thing.
Well, but if you're searching for truth. Like, okay, one thing leads to another. It's like, okay, well, who's this person? Well, who's this person?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you're an honest seeker of truth.
This is what the great books does, right? It actually leads you to truth, right? Whenever you,
but if you're just a regular person going about your life, doing the things you've been told to do, and, you know, just like, just trying to like make it through, society and all of these systems about mm-hmm. the internet, they're set up so that you don't ever need to find these things. You know, like, oh, you know, just keep doing this. Mm-hmm. Just keep focused on that promotion, mm-hmm. you know, and like your life is going to be great. You know, make your house payment and whatever, and you'll get through life. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the internet is an incredible tool. It's incredible, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like the ability to do all the stuff we can do is amazing.
but it's a tool. It's just a tool. I mean,
right.
People, like when the hammer was invented, people were using it to kill each other.
And, right.
You know, so the point I was just trying to make is that it just seems like there are more, you know, cases of sexual deviancy or are there actually, I actually think that there are, and maybe someone who has this, the statistics would say otherwise, but it makes sense to me that because we are, once again, feeding these appetites that really have never been fed.
Right.
That we have people who are now like...
Because it used to be you have to go and go to a brothel.
Yes. But even then, at least you were having to have a face-to-face interaction
with a real human being.
I heard Matt Frad talk about this one time about like...
Who's this?
Matt. he was talking about the difference between going to a strip club versus watching pornography. And he was in no way endorsing strip clubs, okay? I don't want anybody to think that's what I'm saying, that he was saying. But he did make the point that at least at a strip club, you have to actually look a human being in the eyes. You have to actually have a human interaction with a person, which is pornography is so far removed from that. It's just... This is not a real person. They're just a commodity, you know, for me to use.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is this all boils back down to, again, just to kind of circle back to to Bishop Barton's book and the beginning of our conversation, is that it goes back to the way in which we were made. And we were made to be loved. We were made to be loved by our Creator. And we desire to be loved. And we seek love all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like everybody, like anybody who says like, oh, I don't care what anybody thinks about me. It's like, that's total garbage.
Yeah, it is.
That is total garbage. Like in one way, shape, or form, that like maybe you don't care about this aspect of your life of what people think about you.
You might not care what like that person thinks
right.
about you.
But that's just totally not true because we are programmed to desire love.
Mm-hmm.
Like we want to be loved. We want to be recognized. We want to be known. Right?
Bingo. We want to be seen.
We want to be seen.
Known. Yeah.
And the only real fulfillment in this is God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's ways that are oriented that point us towards God, right? The marital embrace,
mm-hmm.
Being able to have a union with friendships, like close friendships, like the friendships in this life prepare us for the friendship that we'll have with God in the next. Right, so like all these things that we have with one another, like true, honest, authentic friendships and good, holy marriages, all these things are great, but they're finite things that we're trying to fill an infinite desire that we have in our hearts
mm-hmm.
that only God can fill.
Yeah.
Right, and so this is what I think G.K. Chesterton said one time, like you know the guys who. Go into a brothel are the same are desiring the same things that people who go to Holy Mass or go to church. They desire to be loved.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so
I think this is especially true for women. Like when the women out there who find themselves really struggling with these like sexual sins, I this is just my own personal opinion. I think that like God is incredibly merciful with those women because he knows they're just looking for him. Right. And so are men. I think it's a little bit different for men. Men do have a tendency to commoditize women, right? Just for more of natural, like for natural reasons. Okay. But I think, and this I'm speaking in broad brushes here, but in general, women really are looking for a relationship. Right, they want this idea of being loved more than just the physical side of it, right? And so, like, especially for women, they are really just looking for Christ. They want the spouse,
which is beautiful because you know the church is the bride of Christ, right? And it's not just a physical, but it's a holistic aspect of love, right? The church provides not only just the physical aspects, but also the spiritual and the emotional and the all aspects of of love is the church, which is the bride, who desires the bridegroom.
You know, and I think Dante was right when he, in Dante's Inferno, when he's going through hell, the sins of a sexual nature, the very first ones, you know, they're at the very highest levels of hell, which are like the weakest sins.
The ninth level, yeah.
Right. And, you know, just because God gave us a very natural desire, like we're programmed to desire these things, right? Sort of like food, right? You have an appetite for food. You need to eat food. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't need to engage in sexual relations, but you kind of have a desire for it that's very, very similar. And so it's kind of understandable. It's still something that we have to work very hard our whole life to engage in. And even if you're somebody who thinks, oh, I don't have, you know what, I kicked those sins a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I don't struggle with those anymore. You just be careful. Mm-hmm. If that's your attitude, then that, like, Satan, I guarantee you, wants you to think that exact thing. Yeah. Oh, that's, I don't struggle with that anymore.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
it's when you can slip.
Boom. Right. Yeah. So, like, we must always stay vigilant with those things. I do want to talk about, I know we've going on, you know, a little bit longer than usual, but that's okay. I do want to talk about contemplation.
Okay, can I give a short little plug before you do?
Please.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to those who, those brothers and sisters in Christ who are experience same-sex attraction and living out the virtue of chastity, because this virtue of chastity is a call to holiness for all men and women, mm-hmm. right? Does not matter whether you're attracted to the same sex or not the same sex, it is a call to holiness for all people. And so those who experience same-sex attraction and live this a chaste life and desire to live a virtuous life and actually, you know, like struggle with it, you know, struggle to live this life. Maybe I don't understand the exact nature that in which you're struggling, but I understand the struggle of living a chaste life, right? And like that is a it is a life worth pursuing. It is yeah. worth doing. And so I just wanted to like bring that up to those who are listening who may experience same sex attraction.
You know, and you and I have had the opportunity to meet some just incredible people. We spoke at the Courage Conference a few years ago,
right. which I highly recommend.
The Courage Conference was great. It was
the Courage Apostolate.
Courage Apostolate, but yeah, if the conference is in your area, you should go because it was a fantastic conference. Mm-hmm. I don't think those people are told or reminded or have maybe even been made aware of the huge gift that they are to the church. We all are called to make a sacrifice of ourselves for the church, right? And you know, a priest makes this gift of celibacy, and it's not just because he wants to be celibate, but it's a gift he offers to the Lord.
Right. In fact, I would be willing to bet that most priests aren't actually like looking forward to that quote unquote whenever they first, you know, are entering seminary.
No, I think that most priests eventually come to a great deep appreciation of celibacy because of
more virtuous. It's the same way with husbands and fathers. Whenever at the very beginning, when you first have a child and you're not really looking forward to getting up at 3 a.m. because the kid is yeah. crying.
And all of a sudden you're an empty nester and you miss
that opportunity.
Getting up at 3. Jim, is that true? He's shaking yeah. his head.
And so like, it's the same thing. It's because you,
Jim, I'm going to send two kids home with you today.
Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah. What an opportunity for you.
Your dreams are fulfilled.
But again, it goes back to, it's because of the desire to live this virtuous life and to see a higher good and the willingness to self-sacrifice yeah. for a good of the for
and
another.
I don't want this to come across wrong. Like I'm like, oh, you guys are, you know, like pat on the back, go get them team or whatever. But it's just absolutely true that those people in life, and you and I have met many of them. We have several supporters of our show that I'm thinking of mm-hmm. specifically, who are heroic in, the choices that they've made as they've come to Christ and now seeking to live a life of chastity, celibacy, And I don't think they really appreciate the huge gift and the graces that they specifically are bringing to the church through this life and the sacrifice that they're bringing, right? So anyway, I appreciate your shout out.
Yeah.
But chastity, I think, is a very crucial, it's an essential element to the contemplative life.
Which we're all called to.
The contemplative life, as we've talked about several times, is the end of all human beings. To have a contemplative relationship with our Lord right now in this life, which is a preparation for, it's the way we build a real friendship with Christ. This is like one of the reasons why I am just such a big fan of Exodus 90 is because it happened to be the program. I think it's a fantastic program. It's done this for thousands of men who taught me how to pray, forcing me to have that quiet time every day with the Lord. I all of a sudden like, oh, wow, I encountered him and he was actually there and present. And he became real in my life in a way that wasn't before. Right. And since then I've learned more and more about the importance of every day having that contemplative time, the quiet time with the Lord. I can't actually sit here and say, yes, I have I sit there and contemplate every single day. I do have quiet time every day. But you know, I got problems. We've talked about this. Like I got a lot of problems.
We can talk about it more
with distress. You know, like
we can talk about
there
more.
There are definitely problems. Times where it's like, all right, I'm going to sit down, have, you know, at least 20 minutes. Like 30 minutes go by and I realize like, oh yeah, Jesus. I forgot I was talking to you. I'm not sure what I've been doing. I'm really sorry but I'm actually out of time. Like, I got to go to work.
I get another call. I'll call you back.
Right. Like we can try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, and then probably tomorrow goes very similarly.
Yeah.
But all that being said, I think that the way we use our appetites, they're going to play themselves out once again in our prayer time. And if we think that, the way that we have custody of the eyes, or the way we use our bodies, whether in a holy way or a bad way throughout the day, if that's not going to have ramifications in our relationship with our Lord, even in just our prayer time, then we're kidding ourselves. Because if you aren't practicing chastity throughout the day, if you don't have fidelity to him, then your ability to sit down and like, okay, now I'm going to be super faithful. I mean, you know, like now I'm going to have this great relationship with him in this moment. That's just not the way it works. And I'm not saying that you can't have a good prayer relationship with Christ, even though you might honestly struggle with some of these sins. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're not actively working to get rid of these things in your life, then you're just not going to be able to pray. You're not going to have an actual relationship with Christ if you don't actually care about removing these other problems that you've got.
Totally.
And it's just a natural thing. It's just a natural consequence of the way we're made, mm-hmm. right? That if you're occupying your mind with certain things throughout the day, then those things are going to continue to occupy your mind when you try to be still. You won't be able to be still. And this is true with all the virtues I have found, that if you're not practicing the virtues, whatever area in which you lack kind of makes itself present when you try to be still.
Yeah. I realize that I don't have enough quiet time when during my quiet time, all that's happening is just noise in my head.
Totally.
I realize, I have to up my quiet time, you know, my meditative time, mm-hmm. because I can't tell you how many hours in adoration I have wasted, and not in a good way of wasting your time with Jesus,
right.
But like of the whole time I was in adoration, I thought about work in this aspect, this relationship, how I was going to accomplish things throughout the day, what's the next modes in which I have to be for the next courses of action that I have to take, all these things. All the stuff. And the only reason why that is happening is because I don't actually allow my brain to have time to process the things in which has to come into completion throughout the day. And so what my brain does is, he's given me quiet time. Now I can internally process the things in which I have to do to make this thing go. And instead of actually having time in relationship with our Lord, all I'm sitting there doing is giving myself self-fulfillment in the things that I have to do throughout the day.
Yes, yes. One of the things Bishop Vardin brings up at the end of the book here, where he's talking about contemplation, he kind of expands the idea of what even is contemplation, which I really appreciated, bringing it a contemplative life is more than just having prayerful time at the beginning of the day, that the whole scope of human activity mm-hmm. can become contemplative. Mm-hmm. He says, to live contemplatively, it is a matter of standing still and watching, paying attention to what happens round about, prepared to step out of our preconceived ideas, alert to the prospect of newfound sense to be weighed in our heart. So constantly being prepared to it really reminded me, especially there at the end, it reminded me of Mary, who contemplated these things in her heart, right? To just let things really soak in and let us think about them. And, which is so hard to do in a world where we're so distracted all the time. Yeah. You don't ponder. The idea of pondering mm-hmm. things is becoming more and more of a foreign concept, because we're who cares about pondering stuff when there's
instant gratification?
When there's the next thing to watch.
Right.
I can keep watching things.
And I am just so guilty of this.
Dude, don't even talk to me. Ugh. Okay? Don't even act like you're worse than me. Okay.
I'm so much worse.
You know you're not worse than me.
I fall so much greater. Jim, do you have any things that you want to talk about falling or any kind of sexual sins that you want to bring up or anything?
Yeah, Jim, what was your first sexual sin?
Or what was your last sexual sin?
I'm out.
Jim says
the whiskey's great though.
It's on the yummy scale of 4.98.
But I like this. This last thing I wrote down here is that a chaste mind, and this is from Bishop Vardin, a chaste mind.
This is like a Michael Scott quote. Wayne Gretzky, you miss 100% of the shots you can't take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott. He's like, this is what I wrote down, the last thing. And this is from Bishop Barb. It's just let me just say the last thing that I came up with that Bishop Vardin said. Go ahead.
No. It has to do with what we're talking about.
It's just really funny the way you said that.
And I also didn't want people to think it was me that was saying it. I'm not saying it. I'm not smart enough to come up with stuff like this. So, but what he said,
and I quote,
a chaste mind will inform our interactions. It will shape our actions so that it will change the way we eat and drink, open and shut doors. Right? And it just made me think about, yes, this is what a real virtue is. That the courageous man is courageous even when he's sleeping. He just is courageous because he's habitually courageous. Mm-hmm. And that this is the same way with the chaste man, that simply that every interaction, even with inanimate things, mm-hmm. would become purified, and that you would start to see all things for the goodness that they are, right? Instead of how can they serve me, which is what the lustful heart does, but the chaste mind sees himself in true relationship with all of creation, the human, the non-human, the animate, the inanimate, right? That it's and it becomes more of a how can I give of myself,
how can I serve these things? How can I be holy with all things, right?
Yeah.
So I just thought that was really beautiful.
I agree. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.